Five Pillars of Freedom on Freedom 970 KUFO AM Portland.
Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to another wonderful Saturday morning. A little rainy, but it's still a wonderful day. And my name is Chuck Price, president and wealth manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management. And as soon as I remember who I am, I'll be able to talk. Anyway, welcome to the show. This is the longest-running financial show with a financial advisor, a estate planning attorney, and a CPA that takes calls. So if you've got a question, we got a couple lines open. This is your opportunity to call in and get your questions answered. 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. And like I said, you can also email me a question. And before I get into that, though, I want to introduce my co-hosts this morning, Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Carl. And Kevin Steggy with the Baker Colson CPA Firm.
Good morning, gentlemen.
And so you guys are all ready for winter. We got our sweatshirts on. We're bundled up.
We do have to sit here and look at Carl's Buffalo Bills sweatshirt and wonder about that.
Let's just face it. I'm a hopeful guy.
You know, I got a couple of darts over here I'm going to fling at him here before the show's over and get that buffalo. Because have you ever had a buffalo steak?
I have.
They're really good.
Yeah.
Actually, we went down to Ashland and had we stopped in a restaurant there, and they had a buffalo steak, and it was really good. Anyway, we're going to get right into the show, and it's because we wanted to kill the Buffalo Bills. Anyway, you're listening to Investing Simplified, and every once in a while, somebody does email me a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, and I had somebody email me the other day, and they asked me why I always, when I gave the stock report, why didn't I give the S&P and the Dow, and why I never gave the NASDAQ. And if you ever heard the song, The Day the Music Died, it's probably could be said about the NASDAQ, because the NASDAQ died back March 10th of 2000. They hit an all-time high of 5,132, and they've been running about 3,700 since then. So I think you could say that was the day the NASDAQ died. So
I think that was the day I made my very first investment. It wasn't a good day to buy the day before it died, I think. So,
well, you know,
bad timing.
People question why I tell about the Dow and the S&P all the way back to 12/31/99, because I want to show this decade. But really, the NASDAQ was the first one that came up in March of and really basically saying that this market was going to be very, very tough. And if you think about it, that was 13 years ago, almost 13 and a half right now. 13 and a half years ago, the NASDAQ gave us the shouting sound to say, hey, this decade's going to suck. And boy, was it right. And, you know, I'm going to go back to the stock market now here, because contrary to what you hear on the radio, contrary to what you hear on TV, this is the one show that's going to give you the straight scoop. And we don't want to tear it down either. We don't want to just give you negative news, but the fact is the fact. And you're living in an environment now that I believe is totally different than the one we've been in the previous 80 years in the market. And I know you hear guys on TV, I hear them all the time myself, I watch the financial news, and guys will say, well, we've been through this before. Well, not really. Not really. We've not been through a $17 trillion debt. We've not been through department after department coming up short. I was talking to Kevin Carl before the show started. In the paper today, there's an article about the Federal Housing Administration. They're going to need money to be bailed out. In sort of September, the Obama administration said they were going to need $943 million to be bailed out. Now, they've come out and said, no, they need $1.7 billion. So, the reason? Rising interest rates. You know, Kevin, we've talked about this. The real scary thing in this whole economy is what happens when rates take off. And I think they are going to raise. I think rates are going to be going up.
Well, you know, Chuck, last week the Fed voted not to taper the bond buyback program, the $85 billion a month, which went against what most people were thinking would happen. And even the morning of that meeting, I remember reading an article where one economist said not tapering would be scary. It would suggest the Fed knows something really bad, and I would want to know what that is.
Well, you know what, though, Kevin? The thing is, they also said, because we are not having a recovery, it's not recovering, we're going to keep pumping money into it. So they kind of did tip their hand and basically say, hey, the reason we're not going to reduce it or taper down is because the economy, if the economy doesn't get that shot of cocaine every month, that $85 billion of fix into the economy, into the vein, it's going to fall apart. And that's why they're doing it. They've got to keep printing the money.
I haven't heard the junkie analogy before. That's interesting regarding our economy.
Well, you better read those Survive and Prosper, Harry Dent. He uses that quite often. In fact, in our conference calls with him, we have monthly conference calls. And for about the last 2 years, he's been using that analogy of a junkie, of a drug addict, and the fact that Wall Street is a drug addict. They're a drug addict to the government pumping this money into holding up the economy. And in reality, the big companies on Wall Street really aren't hiring anybody. They're not expanding. They're not growing. The big companies aren't expanding and growing. And I think the numbers on the unemployment scene were so far for this year, the jobs created, something like 70 to 75% of them are part-time jobs. Now, when are we as a people going to wake up and start demanding from our politicians honest reporting on the economy? You know, I mean, come on, guys. Give us the real numbers. What's the real unemployment number? What's the real jobless people report? You know, what's the real numbers? And I think it's only because they don't want to scare the crap out of people. Because it's not a pretty financial situation right now if you really look at the economy. And to kind of back that up, the Dow Jones closed at 15,258.24 for the day on the 27th. But where do we stand on that all-time high 10,907 of 14,164? Well, we're up a whopping 7.72% for 5 years and 11 months. And next week, it'll be 6 years. And we're at 1.31% per year. But the thing that really bothers me most of all, and this is where the two political party system that we've got in this country need to be flushed down the toilet. Because if you go back to 12/31/99, Bill Clinton was still in office. George Bush didn't come in until 2001. So this covers Clinton, Bush, and Obama. So both parties, here's the reality. The market, the Dow Jones, from 12/31/99 was at 11,497.12. We are up exactly 32.71% for the whole time. That means for 12 years and 9 months, or 2.57% per year.
Which is roughly inflation. So basically, nothing.
Basically, the economy has flatlined for the last 13 years. If we were on life support, we died. Yeah. And that's the reality. And so, listen, we're going to talk about this more in later shows, but this is one of the times where I think you need to take a look at your investment portfolio. If you were lucky enough to have avoided the crash of 2008, stuck some money off to the side, then stuck it in the market, And right now, you're sitting there with some very nice capital gains. I think this is a great opportunity to take a little money off the table. You know, one of the problems with gamblers when they go in and they gamble, and I go to Vegas, but I don't gamble, so I go there to watch the shows and eat the food, and I eat too much food, but go there to watch the shows. And I got to tell you, the problem with people who gamble is they can't quit. They can't take their money and go have a dinner and get out of the gambling casino. If they get up, they just keep putting the money in the machine until they lose it. Well, if you're a stock investor, you gotta take your gains off the table. And this is a perfect time to take a look at your situation and say, hey, maybe it's a little time to take some money off the table. And if you've had some stocks have some really good run-ups, I'd really recommend you do it this year. We know what the capital gains is. We know what the capital gains rate is. When will we know what it'll be next year?
You know, especially if you've been investing in the last 10 years, especially if you went through 2008, you probably have some losses that you can offset those gains against, whether you have a stock that has loss or you have a capital loss carry forward. So definitely some planning available.
You know, Chuck, as the famous economist Kenny Rogers once said, you know, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them.
Yeah, well, you know, and he was exactly right. Yeah, that could be said for playing cards or for the stock market, and that's exactly right. To follow up on that, the S&P closed at 1691.75, and now where do we stand on the S&P from 10907? Well, we're up 8.09%. So 5 years and 11 months, we've had a 1.37% swing. And let me ask you, everybody talks about that this is a great rally, a great recovery. Well, I have a little problem with a great recovery at 1.37% a year. And now we go back to the decade, go back to 12/31/99, the S&P is up a whopping 15.14% or 1.19% per year. If you knew you could take the risk of investing in the Dow or the S&P and take the risk and make a whopping 1% to 2%, I mean, that can't excite you. That can't excite anybody.
Does the stock market always, I guess it mirrors the economy a little bit, but is it always a true reflection of what's happening in the economy? Sometimes, you know, it can seem there can be a run-up when things aren't really solid and or run down when things
you're
are.
You're exactly right. I mean, it's just like what's going on right now. The fact they're pumping all this money into the market, we're having a run-up, but the real earnings of the companies aren't there. I mean, they're just really not there. And so, but I think in the long run, the market does relate to the economy, because if you think about it, all the companies that run – that's how they're running. That's how we move money in this country.
Eventually, it comes to the bottom line.
Yeah, it's got to come to the bottom line. And, you know, we need to, as a country, the government needs to do what the people have done. American people have reduced their debt substantially. American people have tightened their belt. American industry has tightened their belt. Everybody's done it but the government. And the government just keeps belching out more money and printing money they don't have. And I don't know anybody with any common sense, and I guess common sense and government just don't go together, but anybody with any common sense knows that you cannot keep printing $85 billion a month, lending it out to the banks at zero, and then having the government buy 50% of it back every month at the 10-year rate, treasury rate at 2.75. The numbers don't come out. I mean, I don't understand, and I can't understand any economist. I've heard a couple of economists say that, wow, this is what we need to be doing. We can actually borrow our way to prosperity, and I've never heard any of them ever tell how that really works. I know for one thing, if you try that as an individual, you will have what's called bankruptcy. Now, maybe not the government, but you'll have bankruptcy. We're going to take a quick break and come back with Carl's comments. You're listening to Investing Simplified on a Saturday morning. This is your opportunity to call in. You can call in at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. We do investing simplified.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, welcome back. This is Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and this is Investing Simplified. And now is the time for Carl's comments, where I talk about something that's come up in my practice or that I thought might be interesting to our listeners. And other than economic news, something more that might even be a little happier than that, although not much, and that is Carl's top 10 things you can do to make it easier on your kids when you die. It's a little hard to make dying funny.
Leave them lots of money.
Anyway, this is one of the things that many of my clients really ask me about is, you know, how do I make it easy for the kids? In other words, I don't want to leave them a mess. I don't want to have a whole lot of trouble for them, you know, and that sort of thing. So the top 10, starting with number 10, is, of course, make a will or a trust and tell your kids where it is. Because sometimes they get lost and then that starts a fight. So number 9, make prearranged funeral and burial plans. One of the hardest things you have to do as a child of a deceased parent is to go through the process of making funeral arrangements and burial arrangements and whatever all you have to do. I've done it twice, and I can't say that I particularly enjoyed either one of them. So it would have been a lot easier, I think, had it all been done, and all I had to do is go down and tell the folks that we're ready to go. Number 8, give important personal property to your children or your grandchildren or whoever you want before you die. And then tell the family when you do it. This can solve a lot of problems because then you don't have, I was supposed to get the china and I was supposed to get the antique rocker or the grandfather clock. This way, it avoids confusion. You've already given it away. It's stuff that you probably weren't using anyway. I think it's a really good way to just do it. Don't just tell them you're going to do it. Actually do it. Make them take it away. Make them take it out. That way it's done. And number 7, make a list of all of your assets and keep it current. And again, tell your kids where it is. Number 6, write your own obituary. I've written these things before, and it's hard to write an obituary for your parent. If nothing else, you should at least give sort of a biography or something so that you can get those details in there and write something that makes sense and that is useful to people reading it, saying, what was this person about? Not an easy thing to do, though, but it's something that might be worth doing. Number 5. Write an ethical will. Now, this is kind of an unusual thing, but an ethical will is really one of those things that can be anything you want it to, but usually it has to do with sharing your religious beliefs, sharing, giving, compliments, your values, your philosophy of life, your hopes and dreams for your children. You know, write something nice, something that really reflects your character, and have it available for your kids when you die so that they can look back on that and say, yeah, that's the way I want to live, or that's what I learned from my dad, or that's what I learned from my mom. Those are nice things to do, and it takes a lot of effort, though. It's a hard thing to write, but I suggest that it might be one of the most valuable gifts you can do for your kids and make it easier on them when they have to deal with the fact that you're gone. Number four, make a list of all your living relatives and have their addresses at hand and tell your kids where it is. Because a lot of times you're going to want to get a hold of these people, even if you haven't made a will, especially you're going to need to. But a lot of times it's just important because you may be the only person that knows some of these people. You know, some families are big, some are small. Mine is very small, but, you know, I doubt that I could tell you where all of my relatives are or who they are. I know most of them, but and I know my mother knew a whole bunch of them, and, you know, some of that information can be lost. So number three, make lifetime gifts to kids and charities. And I don't mean just the little stuff. I mean, you know, real gifts. If you're able to do that, if you have sufficient resources that you know that you're going to be fine for the rest of your life, then it is a great thing to make gifts. It does two things. Number one, it reduces your estate tax vulnerability. And number two, it makes people happy and makes you happy and does something good for some others, and you get to see it. So all of those things are good things. So that's number three, make lifetime gifts to kids and charities. And number two, make and complete a bucket list. That's, you've seen the movie. You know, a bucket list is the things you want to do before you kick the bucket. It doesn't have to be quite as dramatic as, you know, flying a plane through a barn or whatever, but it certainly can be those kinds of things. You know, you can do your bungee jumping if you really like. I would skip that one, but nonetheless, you can pick whatever you want and tell your kids about it, because maybe they'll help you accomplish those things. Maybe something you can do in your later years, you know, they can help you, you know, do whatever kind of bungee list or whatever you want to do. I'm not sure what mine would include right now. You know, I know that I don't want to jump off a bridge or anything, so that wouldn't be fun for me. And the number one thing you can do is clean your garage. Now, I know that sounds a little silly, but here it is. Here's the idea. First of all, when you got to clean your garage, because if you don't, your kids are going to have to do it for you. So to start this out, get rid of all of the old exercise equipment that you got in there. You know, the one with all the dust on it, the one that you rode once? You know, you probably got five or six of them in there. You know, give those to somebody or give them there, because you know you're not going to get back to riding them or walking on them or jumping on them or whatever you got to do. Same goes for electronic equipment. You know, old stereo stuff that doesn't work anymore. You know, there are shops that like to buy some of that stuff. You know, and a lot of times it doesn't work. Or sometimes it's so obsolete that you can't get any sound out of it or picture out of it anyway. Get those things out of there. And books that you will never read. You know, get rid of those things. You know you have them. You know you've got your old college textbooks in there and all that stuff. Those books are really obsolete. If you didn't graduate from college in the last 5 years, you know those books have now become fiction. So get rid of those books and that'll make it easier. And here's my number one thing to get rid of, and that is get rid of all of the packages of envelopes tied around with either ribbons or rubber bands that have bank statements or receipts or any kind of financial information, and they're usually in little packets by either months or years or whatever that. Get those things, and then you get yourself a garbage can that has wheels on it. You know, one of them plastic jobs? And you put that in the middle of the garage, and you throw all of those things into it, and then you add to that any other financial records that are more than 10 years old, and you put them in there, and you go down to the shred company and have all that stuff shredded. I can guarantee you that will save your kids a whole lot of effort. Now then you want to get rid of all them old appliances. You know the ones, the food processor and the juicer that you used once and you said, ew, I don't like that. And you know, so you got to put that thing out there. Get rid of that thing. It's just drawing dust and it's going to be hard to get rid of. You know, so we had a food processor. I'm pretty sure you could put your tennis shoes in there and cut it up. It was pretty good, but you don't want to do that. And then finally, get rid of your clothes that you haven't worn in the last year.
Nobody's going to want them, you know, but you could do some good, give them to Goodwill or Salvation Army or something. And, you know, by that time, now you've got a pretty clean garage, and you also have a nicer garage, but moreover, your kids don't have a whole hassle to mess with. So that's number one, clean your garage.
Wow. You know, the problem is that's all true. It's all very, very true. I mean, I've seen that movie a lot of times.
Oh yeah, it's one of those things that a lot of my clients who find themselves in the role of personal representative or trustee, having to deal with mom's house or dad's house, and heaven help you if mom or dad was a hoarder, because or even kind of let's call them a collector. But either way, it's a terribly difficult thing to do, because you got to remember, usually the kids who are doing this work, they're working full time, they're taking care of their kids, they're trying to put their kids through college, you know, and so they got to work nights and weekends to deal with all this stuff, and it's pretty tough. Not to mention the fact that they're reeling under the fact that their parent has died. So those are good things that you can do, and practical things, maybe not legal things. If you have questions, though, about the legal aspects of estates or probate or wills or trusts or anything like that, welcome your calls here, 417-7626. That's area code 503-417-7626. And in fact, you could try to even stump us a little bit on a financial question or a tax question or a legal question, and we'll try our best to not get
stumped. The expert question.
Yeah, stump the expert. Yeah.
I like it. So, and Kevin, you were going to say something about this.
Well, I was just going to say that collection of cottage cheese cartons that has grown over 10,000, at least it doesn't have to be all or nothing. At least get it down to 1,000 or something along those lines.
Amen.
I've seen a lot of old mason jars, too.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Investing Simplified. We're going to be right back with Kevin Stege, the tax investigator, with some very exciting tax news. And again, if you want to give us a call, 503-417-7626, 503-417-7626, give us a call, ask your question. It's free, and free is a good price. We'll be right back.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over 3 decades, and its 9 attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
This is Investing Simplified. Give us a call, 503-417-7626. And this is the part of our show where I try to follow up on Carl's sage advice and witty delivery, which it's just not going to happen. So I apologize for it already. Actually, that's very good stuff, Carl. And I think you probably have hit a chord with most of our listeners who have either had a parent or a grandparent that they've gone through some of this with, and I think all of that is very apropos. So thank you for that.
Cool. Thank you.
Yes. So on the tax investigator today, we're about 5 years away from the financial crisis that we had, and maybe some of our listeners, along with you fine gentlemen have read some reports on where we are now, 5 years later. Where do we stand? And a couple things I just wanted to pull out of some of this that I've read. I find it interesting. It's not all dire, but it's not exactly, I think, what you would call just a robust recovery. Jobs-wise, we're still about 2 million jobs shy of where we were back in December of 2007. So that's a pretty significant number.
You'd never know that listening to the evening news, would you?
You wouldn't. And like you said, Chuck, this is a lot of this is part-time jobs too. So it's probably a larger amount. I find this one very interesting. Income, median household income. 5 years ago, compared to now, we're just a little over 6% down in median household income than where we were 5 years ago, and that's after after adjusting for inflation.
Yeah, and that's because of the part-time jobs.
That's true.
It's got to be.
I find this even more interesting. If we go back even further, let's go back to 2000. Median household income is actually down 7% from 13 years ago.
Kind of goes right along with my stock equity report, doesn't it?
It does. And these are some stats that you don't always hear. That
yep.
It kind of shows that, the last decade has not been real friendly economically to the middle class, frankly. How about housing? Well, we all kind of have followed that. Mortgages, we're still about 15% of mortgages are underwater, and home values are still about 16% below where they were 5 years ago. So that's kind of a given. In regarding housing and the bond buyback interest rate situation we've been talking about, I know we said this a couple weeks ago, but definitely take a look at your mortgage. It's still amazing how many people still have a 6% or higher mortgage out there. And this is probably the time to do a refinance if you have the opportunity and stuff. Your house has probably bounced back a little bit in value, whether it's real or inflated. Mortgage rates are still historically very low. Maybe you have an FHA loan you want to get out of from under mortgage insurance. This is probably a good time to take a look at that. So that's it's not always the case, the right thing to do, but definitely something worth looking at. Too big to fail. How about our big six banks? Where do they stand from now compared to 5 years ago? Well, their assets as a combined group are up almost 30%. So they have fared very well, very well. So like I said, it's not all bad news. All right, you're laughing at me, Chuck. So
No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you. Hey, we've got a caller on the line here. And let me see here. It doesn't show on my thing here, but looks like we've got a caller, Tina, with a question about trustees. Tina, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and your question?
The question is, I'm the trustee of my parents' estate, and my father passed away, and in his trust, he put aside like $3,000 for one of his friends, and his friend passed away recently, and so I don't know what to do with that $3,000. His friend's wife is still alive. So what do we do in this case?
So there's a specific gift of $3,000 to John, and John, but it doesn't say anything about what happens if John dies first.
No, it didn't.
And the trust doesn't say anything. Well, there, and he died before. Well, obviously, he died before your dad did. Then I take it.
No, my dad died first, and then he died after.
Oh, okay. Well, then, without seeing the trust or anything, then generally speaking, what happens is that if a person dies and has a specific gift made to them that and they die after they were entitled to it, then it would basically go to his heirs, and that would be generally under whatever his intestate succession would be, but it might be based on his estate. So you'd really have to do some investigation. You might want to have a lawyer look at all of this stuff because, you know, there are different scenarios. I don't want you to run out and just send him the $3,000 quite yet because I'd want to know a little bit more about it. But it probably goes to his heirs, depending on whether or. But there again, he may have an estate that directs where his money is supposed to go. And instead of if he had no will, then it would go by intestate succession, and that varies depending on his family structure. Because if you have, say, for example, if he'd been married before and had children by prior marriage and things like that, that makes a difference in terms of where it might go. So you kind of have to work through some of that. But I would just hold on to it until you can learn a little bit more information. I would recommend that you see a lawyer nearby and work that out, and then ultimately you'll figure out the right place to send it.
Okay, well, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Bye. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call.
Well, thanks for calling, Tina. And, you know, on that, I think a detailed reading of the trust to see if there's a phrase or something in there that indicates what should happen would, like you say, somebody who knows what they're looking for in there, that would be the first place.
You know, one of the things that I like to do, unless there's some specific notion, I don't like to leave them open-ended like that most of the time. What I prefer is it says, give $3,000 to John, but if John dies before he, you know, gets the money, then, you know, either give it to, you know, his kids or give it to his wife or make it go back into the residue, you know, mm-hmm. and it goes to the other people in the trust.
And I've seen this, the trust specify both ways,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Depending on what the
you know, Carl, the question I had there, and maybe it sounds like her dad passed away first.
Right.
And then... So I wonder what the time was from the time her dad passed away to shouldn't she have distributed the funds out?
Depends on how long. Yeah, well, it depends on how long. And the other thing is it may be that sometimes there's a survivorship designation in a trust that says in order to be a beneficiary, you have to survive the death of the decedent by 60 days or 90 days. I've actually seen one that was 6 months, which I thought was crazy. But so that might have an effect also.
Then there could have been a cash problem too. Maybe they had to sell property to liquidate.
Exactly.
Who knows what?
And so and there may be a requirement to pay it, but you got to figure out who it goes to first.
The one thing I will say, and I had a situation with some people that came in the office here recently, and this woman was a trustee and not having any financial background or anything else. It's a very, very difficult situation without good legal advice and good financial advice. And I highly recommend anybody that does end up being a trustee, or if somebody's talking to you about being a trustee, you need to check things out first as good advice, because it is a tough job.
It is. And I think people, a lot of times they're either misinformed or they just don't know that it is a big job, and it involves a lot of responsibility, and indeed it's kind of perilous for the uninitiated, because I've had a number of people who have essentially administered a trust without virtually having any advice of any kind for a period of years, and then learning that they did it wrong. And then having somebody get mad at them and file a lawsuit and say, hey, by the way, I want to find out what you did with all this money. And
That's exactly what happened in this case. And and that's where you have to tell people that, hey, this is not an easy job. People need to know what they're getting into. It's tough.
Well, it is, and it involves not only taking care of the money, it also involves distributing that money, but it involves giving notices to various people and giving accountings to people and a whole bunch of things and making sure the taxes get paid. And there are some time limits, especially if the estate is of any substantial size. There are some very serious time limits to work with respect to inheritance tax and the like. So,
you know, I kind of relate it to being an umpire or to your tax man. Because they have to tell you some tough decisions you got to make. And Kevin, you were talking about some tough decisions we got to make on taxes.
That's right, and we'll get into some pretty good details here. Thanks for the call, Tina. We do appreciate all of our callers and our listeners that call in and tell us or email us that they actually listen to our show. So that's very nice. We appreciate that. Well, the last item here from our 5-year anniversary is the Dodd-Frank Act enacted about 400. Regulatory changes that should have occurred. I know Chuck is wilting over there.
Oh, I'm a big fan of Dodd-Frank.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And yeah. About less than 40% of those have been enforced, so I think you have other fans out there. But one of them that has not been enforced that they're looking at doing is kind of a controversial pay ratio rule where large companies must disclose the annual total compensation of all employees as a ratio of total compensation of their chief executive officer. And, of course, proponents say, hey, we want to know what, you know, these executives are making. And, of course, opponents are saying this is just too complicated to calculate.
Well, one of the things I'm going to talk about in my upcoming book about Investing Simplified is one of the things, and I'm very, for those listeners who don't know, and if you can't guess, I'm pretty conservative financially, very conservative. And, you know, to me, if you have a publicly traded stock, there should be and just like government work, there should be nothing that's hidden. If you have a publicly traded stock where you're asking people to invest their money with you, that should be total open disclosure. You should know what everybody makes, what everybody's getting paid, what every bonus, every parachute thing, if you're going to invest money in that stock. And one of the problems I see in this country that we have, we have the good old boy network where the big government politicians and the big corporations are working hand in hand. And a lot of stuff goes on that we have no idea. But it's amazing to me how we can have government positions paying more than the President of the United States when I don't know that you could have a more important job than President of the United States. I mean, really. That guy's got whether I like Obama or not, it's a tough job. And that is, you got to wake up any morning, you could be attacked. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in the world, so it's not an easy job. Just look at his hairline. Look at his hair. I mean, you look at those presidents, when they go into office, before they go to office, and the 4 years, the 8 years after, all those guys age a lot. I mean, it's a tough job. So I think full disclosure is a good thing, and I think corporate America's had a run on this thing for a long time. And like, for example, all those big banks we bailed out and they turned around and gave millions and millions of bonuses to people to run into bankruptcy? How insane is that? And me as a stock investor, I'm infuriated about it.
Yep, that's right. Well, speaking of our president, that takes us right into our final segment here for the tax investigator, and that's going to be a few rules regarding Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, as it is also known. And these are some baseline rules that I think we all need to get into our head, similar to if we were selling a home. We all kind of have learned the home sale rules and the exclusions. This is a new area that we all need to make sure we're on top of. And I wouldn't say there's a lot of misinformation out there, but there's a lot of kind of uncertainty about what exactly is happening. And so I think we'll kind of try to occasionally give you some things to be able to, again, get into your head to be able to start knowing where you fit into this whole framework. Besides the cost of insurance going up or down, who knows what that's going to happen with this. So the first thing is businesses and individuals were required to get on board with this if you fit certain parameters, or there would be a penalty. For businesses over 50 employers, that employee has been set aside for another year. But for individuals, it has not. So the first penalty will kick in starting in, you'll get charged. If you're not covered in 2014, you'll get charged on your 2015 tax return if you were required to have insurance and you were not covered. The penalty is relatively low for that first year. A household can have a maximum penalty of $285. And there's some other calculations that would go into that. Potentially 1% of the excess of your income over the filing requirement, but we won't get into that. So the first year, it's relatively low, and so nothing really much to worry about there. Medicare, Medicaid, TRICARE, which is Department of Defense Military Health System, and Veterans Coverage, those are all going to qualify as minimum coverage. So if you are covered under any of those, you have qualifying coverage, and you don't need to run out and get additional insurance and that type of a thing. So that should be a bit of a relief for retirees and 65 and over. So probably most important is there are going to be several groups of people who are exempted from the individual mandate. And this is where I think we need to start learning a few of the details. So if you're eligible for coverage with your employer, but you have to pay a little bit on your insurance, in other words, they don't cover all of it, if what you have to pay exceeds 8% of your household adjusted gross income, they're saying that's too expensive for you and you're exempted from having to have coverage. And of course, there will be reporting requirements with the exchanges and all of that to prove that, which is just a whole separate issue. If you're ineligible for employer coverage, if the cost of the basic level plan in the exchange, so you're ineligible with your employer, so you go to the exchange, and if the cost at the exchange less any of your federal tax credits for buying the insurance, if that exceeds 8% of your adjusted gross income, then you do not have to get insurance. It's too expensive for you, and there's going to be no penalty. If you have another filer that is exempt from the penalty is if you have a break in coverage for 3 months or less, that's not significant. They're not worried about that. And then if you have a hardship where you just cannot afford it, but you should have, if you can show that hardship, that gets you out of the penalty. And then lastly, if you're a member of a religious group or you're opposed to public insurance based on your religious beliefs, then you can get out of that. So anyway, just a few items to get us on track and see where you stand.
Well, Kevin, didn't they give a didn't they go out a year on the employer mandate? So
yes.
So the employer, but does that include small employers or is that just for large employers?
Employers with 50 or more employees.
Okay, so if you have less than 50, it doesn't even affect you.
That's right. You're not required to provide insurance for your employees. Right.
So you can let them have none.
That's right. And they would have to.
Of course, in the marketplace, if you did that, you wouldn't have any employees.
That's true, because it's a competitive disadvantage if you're not providing a competitive benefit package.
Yeah, that still doesn't stop our premium from going up dramatically.
That's right.
Unfortunately. And I was listening to a program on this morning, as a matter of fact, when I got up and I was watching a business network. And one of the things they were talking about is about the fact that a lot of young people, because their rates are going to be substantially higher probably than they were before. And so a lot of them are just going to say, give me the penalty. I'm not going to pay. I mean, if you're talking about paying a $285 penalty versus a $800 premium, and you're a healthy young person, they're probably not going to pay it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy, but, insurance is an actuarial game. The younger you are and you pay the premiums, the chances are you're not even going to use it, the coverage. And the older person who needs the coverage is the one who's really got to do it, and can't afford to do it in some cases, so they need those younger premiums to come in there. I'm just not sure that forcing it in this kind of a government plan is the way to go, but nobody denies that you need to have affordable health care for everybody and have health care for everybody. The question is, how do you do it and make it work? That's the problem, and I mean, it is a dilemma. So we're going to come right back with the Knowledge Trust. You're listening to Investing Simplified on a rainy Saturday morning in Portland, Oregon. We are live, and we are waiting here for your call. If you've got a question, give us a call at 503 513-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Investing Simplified.
Shaking all over.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
If I had a $1 million.
Well, if you got $1 million and you want to know what to do with it, you need to give us a call right now because we'll tell you exactly what you can do with it at 503-417-7626, and we'll make it look like a bunch of rabbits and grow. How's that? You know, speaking about that, I did report on the Federal Housing Authority. I did want to point out this, you know, when I said about the stock report, and I missed this because I wanted to bring back to this. You know, I said the market's different than it has been in 80 years because the last 80 years, the S&P and the Dow both averaged about 8 to 10%. And they're certainly not doing that the last 12 years. Well, this is the first time in 79 years the Federal Housing Authority has needed help to bail out. Now, if that doesn't tell you something, if you can't, if you're so naive out there that you think everything is just rosy, hunky-dory, and now you got an agency for the first time in 79 years needs help, that's got to tell you something. And even the most logical person in the world or illogical person in the world would have to understand that. You know, but speaking about that, there are funny things that happen in life. And Kevin, you were telling Carl and I a little story here about the IRS.
Well, yeah, this is I guess it depends who you are on how funny this is, but and maybe our listeners heard this or earlier. So earlier this year, and this is actually a tax court case that came out of Eugene, of all places.
So this is one of those truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah, well, yes, exactly. So a man claimed that while under audit from the IRS, a female IRS agent propositioned him and threatened to impose, shall we say, stiff fines if he didn't go along with her proposition. So this is definitely puts you in a bad position. So he naturally complied, and then he sued her and the government for basically undue influence, I guess. But the interesting thing is the court said, "Nah, we're not going along with that. You failed to show that her actions were within the scope of her employment. In other words, was there something going on regardless of this?" So anyway.
Well, you mean the government said that it was okay?
They did not allow him to collect any money, punitive or otherwise, regarding this situation. That's what the court said. I have a feeling she was severely censured. I don't know if she has a job or not.
Maybe she's like the gal that, what's her name, Lerner, that took the Fifth Amendment and now gets to retire and get all her pension money and gets to walk away from the IRS. You know, the IRS is a pretty good scam. They got all the power and all the authority, and they can do about anything they want to do. And then when they do break the law, they get rewarded. It's not a bad deal.
That's right. So if you're under audit and you run into a situation like this, definitely give me a call. Because we want to know. No, because I think you need to call Carl in this situation.
Especially, we want to know about the fines, right?
That's right.
And I won't go. I won't go any further than just say the fines.
That's right.
But you know, that's interesting that that would happen with the. It's just hard to believe that that could happen with the IRS.
Yeah, that's a pretty extreme case. So anyway.
Well, I, you know, the IRS are usually a humorless lot. So I don't know. It just is. Odd. It's complicated.
I think you said it was, this is a kinder and gentler
IRS. Yeah, the kinder
IRS.
And gentler IRS. Yeah, well.
Yeah, I don't think when they hired him, I don't think they were hiring him to be that kinder and gentler.
Yeah. You don't think of him, never mind.
I didn't know they had an escort service, you know. Well, anyway, you're listening to Investing Simplified on a wonderful Saturday morning. It's a little rainy, a little windy, And Kevin, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, how would they do it during the week?
We're at BakerColson.com. Our phone number is 503-666-5569. We're out the east side of Gresham on Division Street, and would love to hear from you if you just need to run something by me, by one of our other competent CPAs. We're the largest accounting firm in the Portland area east of the Willamette River.
Well, ironically, the Warren Allen firm is the largest general practice litigation firm east of the Willamette River as well. And we are at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue. We are at warrenallen.com. And the telephone number there is 503-255-8795. And we have 9 lawyers waiting to serve you.
Well, Price Financial Group Wealth Management, not to be outdone here, is also on the east side at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, in the Mall 205 area. And we're not the largest, but we'd like to consider ourselves one of the best. So we hope that you'll listen to our show next week. We'll have another dynamite show with lots of good information from Carl and Kevin. And we're looking forward to it. And hopefully the weather will give us a little bit of break. We are supposed to have a nicer weekend. And just a heads up out there to everybody. They're saying we might have high winds and heavy rain tonight. So you need to be prepared. You need to have your, make sure you have batteries in your flashlight. Make sure you know where your candles are at, just in case you're without power. They say that maybe several areas in the Portland area could be without power tonight. So let's hope they're all wrong. And we'll visit you next Saturday morning on Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group Wealth.